Now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan anila nijonne go shavothya, nijonne go shavothya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Bye.
Music from the drum Young Grey Horse off their Canyon Records CD entitled Loyal to That Old Man. That song is known as a women's traditional dance. In powwow etiquette, there is the northern and southern style of the women's traditional. Northern style dancers stay in one place, lightly moving to the drum's rhythm. Southern style dancers slowly walk in circle with their steps in time with the drum. Both styles carry a fringed shawl over their left arm and hold a feather fan in their right hand, which is raised in salute to the drum's honor beats. The ladies wear beaded moccasins, leggings, and either a buckskin or cloth dress. Women also wear a sacred eagle or hawk feather, along with a breastplate, knife, and pouch. The women's traditional dance is beautiful and graceful. The dancers show pride in our traditions. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's program is entitled Climate Change and Energy Justice, a conversation with three youth activists. Yad Kiddushi Native Center, like many indigenous peoples throughout the world, have long been speaking out about the many serious problems impacting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life. Humanity is living during a critical time in our planet's history. This is why our Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices programs focus on many important global issues that need serious attention. Today's broadcast highlights the critical issues of global climate change and energy justice. Today's program is a conversation with three fine young women who are working for a better world. My program guests are Mandy Hancock, Angela Cisneros, and Amanda Adams. The dedication these three people have exemplify youth activism. It is young people like them that give me hope for the future and energizes me to continue my activism. Yad Kiddushi Native Center has been very concerned about global climate change and energy justice for many years. Yad Kiddushi Native Center networks with many campaigns, organizations, and projects that are involved in climate energy issues. The interconnections of cultural, social, economic, and environmental justice as it relates to climate and energy issues is a major focus of Yad Kiddushi Native Center's work. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, indigenous peoples have tried for many years to warn the international community about many serious ecological issues, especially global climate change and abusive energy development. Exploitation of energy resources have greatly impacted Native peoples throughout the globe. The history of colonization and now globalization has been fueled from the greed of energy development. Indigenous peoples have made numerous declarations about climate change at various international forums, such as at the United Nations and to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. A Native woman, Sheila Watt Cloutier, former chairperson of the Inuit Circumpolar Council, an international organization of indigenous peoples of the Arctic, shared the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize with former U.S. Vice President Al Gore for their work on global climate issues. In 1998, as a journalist, I attended a national climate conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, hosted by NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. This NASA summit was special and historic in that many Native peoples were invited to present testimony.
the Albuquerque Declaration, and Native Peoples, Native Homelands Climate Change Report, entitled Circle of Wisdom, is an important reference. There have been many other international declarations by Indigenous peoples on climate, such as Carrie Oker at the UN Conference on Environment and Development, in Quito, Ecuador, in Lyon, France, at The Hague, Netherlands, in Milan, Italy, in Kyoto, Japan, in Bonn, Germany, in Nakuru, Kenya, Africa, at the Indigenous Nationalities of the Amazon, and the April 2009 Indigenous Peoples Global Summit on Climate Change in Anchorage, Alaska, are important examples. Unfortunately, the wisdoms and knowledge of Indigenous peoples about climate change is a voice that is still not respected enough by governments, industry, and the world citizenry that seems to ignore anthropogenic global climate impacts. A priority of Yad Kiddushin Native Center's involvement in the climate and energy justice movement is encouraging student and youth activism. We do so locally at Florida Gulf Coast University, where I am a lecturer and curriculum advisor. As an ecologist and community activist, I also participate in various student and youth organized conferences, projects, and protests on climate, energy, environment, and sustainability issues. I am proud to say that Yad Kiddushin Native Center has and continues to encourage and mentor young people to become involved in these issues. Today's three Wolf Mountain Radio program guests, Mandy Hancock, Angela Cisneros, and Amanda Adams, recently visited Yad Kiddushin Native Center to talk about the 2009 Florida Power Shift Climate and Energy Conference we all are going to attend. Power Shift is a national campaign of more than 303,000 young people calling for bold, serious action on climate and energy. Power Shift is a project of the Energy Action Coalition. EAC was founded in June 2004 to unite a diversity of organizations in an alliance that supports and strengthens the student and youth clean, just, and renewable energy movement. Power Shift is known for mobilizing thousands of students and youth to rally in Washington, D.C. to pressure the White House and Congress for a strong and comprehensive climate and energy plan. Power Shift's goal is for U.S. energy policy that creates a renewable energy economy with millions of new green jobs, ends dependence on dirty, polluting energy, brings American security, protects the environment, and reduces harmful global climate change pollution. The work of the Energy Action Coalition is so timely in view of the upcoming Global Climate Treaty Conference in Copenhagen, Denmark. Yad Kiddushin Native Center urges our listeners to become active in climate and energy issues. Consider joining Power Shift. Sign their petition against dirty tricks by the fossil fuel energy companies and their lobbyists. Urge President Obama and members of Congress to create safe, clean, renewable energy and climate policy. Participate in regional conferences, statewide symposiums, and local events in support of energy, environment, and climate justice actions. There are many fine organizations like EAC that will welcome your involvement. Remember, think globally and act locally. In 2006, I participated in a Florida statewide meeting of college students guided by EAC's Campus Climate Challenge to encourage universities to invest in renewable energy. Florida Gulf Coast University, where I am a lecturer and curriculum advisor, has signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. FGCU is also constructing a 2-megawatt solar energy project on campus, which will reduce FGCU's use of polluting fossil fuel energy. I generally support this alternative energy project. However, the 16-acre solar field has generated much controversy. Institutions of higher education must show leadership on energy and climate issues. Greening of college campuses by reducing, reusing, and recycling should become a priority. It should be standard practice for colleges to conserve more energy and utilize safe, clean, and renewable energy technologies. Reducing a school's ecological footprint will save money. It also will be an example to society of how communities can create a healthier and sustainable future. An example of this is the USGBC LEED Certified Energy and Environment Design Buildings. A good example is FGCU's Demonstration and Learning Center Green Building Project that is nearing construction. Green Building incorporates a number of important key concepts in design, construction, and maintenance. These include energy efficiency, passive design, recycled and renewable building materials, water usage, waste management, healthy indoor environment, and landscaping that protects and restores the site by planting native vegetation, which can be habitat for wildlife. The green building will showcase sustainable building standards and practices. Importantly, it will serve as a training center for engineering students and the construction industry. Universities as centers of education and research must also promote energy and environmental sustainability by their academic mission. Curriculums must include critical energy and climate issues. Courses must be interdisciplinary so that students learn about the serious global problems we are now faced with. Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education, where I serve as a member of the center's Board of Advisors, pedagogy is focused on ecological literacy and planetary citizenship. For a sustainable and peaceful future through scholarship, education, and action. Florida Gulf Coast University's 9 student goals and outcomes exemplify the type of education needed for the 21st century. Mandy, Angela, and Amanda, after eating some cornbread I baked, agreed to share their views on climate, energy, environment, and sustainability issues on Wolf Mountain Radio. I now present a brief background on each guest. Mandy Hancock is a Florida campus organizer for the Southern Energy Network's Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. A group of us activists in Florida have worked with Mandy in establishing the Florida Safe and Sustainable Energy Campaign to fight nuclear power issues in Florida. Angela Cisneros is a student at Florida Gulf Coast University and a Southwest Florida community activist. Angela is president of FGCU's campus group, the Progressive Student Alliance. She also is a board member of EPEC, the Environment and Peace Education Center, a local grassroots group. Angela and I have worked together on many important socioeconomic environmental justice issues, such as farm worker justice. Amanda Adams is a student at Florida Gulf Coast University. As an environmental studies major, Amanda is active in environmental and sustainability issues on campus. Interested in agriculture and food issues, Amanda is coordinator of the Backyard Farmers Project. As I welcome Mandy, Angela, and Amanda to Wolf Mountain Radio, I wish to read a statement from the Earth Charter, which I think exemplifies the philosophy my 3 guests and I believe in. Quote, "In the midst of a magnificent diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family and one earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace, unquote. Ladies, thank you for visiting Yad Kiddushin Native Center. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Hello, my name is Mandy Hancock with Southern Energy Network. I'm the Florida organizer working primarily on nuclear justice issues.
Hi, my name is Amanda Adams. I live in Naples, Florida, and I attend Florida Gulf Coast University. I'm part of the Student Government Environmental Initiatives Committee and also the president of an organization called the Backyard Farmers, trying to start gardens on campus to help with our climate change problem.
Hello, my name is Angela Cisneros. I'm from Naples, Florida, senior at Florida Gulf Coast University, co-director of the Progressive Student Alliance.
Thus far in our conversation, we've talked about power shift and your work, Mandy, as an organizer. We've talked about solar power and Florida Gulf Coast University's solar project. We've talked about the cozy relationships between government agencies and power utilities. And we've commented on the political and economic influence of powerful electric companies such as Florida Power and Light Group. The topic I want to now focus on is nuclear energy. This is a subject that Yad Kiddushin Native Center has been fighting against for nearly 40 years. Nuclear power is a very serious monster for Native Americans and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Uranium mining, milling, and radioactive waste directly impact indigenous peoples whose sacred lands are desecrated and contaminated by the nuclear fuel cycle. Listeners who wish to learn more about nuclear energy should listen to Wolf Mountain Radio's for a program interview series with my friend Mary Olson. The series listed on radioforall.net is entitled Fighting Nuclear Power. Mary Olson has been a 20-year anti-nuclear activist and staff member of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. She directs NIRS's Southeast Office, which enables her to work with us in Florida fighting nuclear power. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, current nuclear energy issues in Florida focus on two big utilities, Florida Power and Light and Progress Energy. I'm going to ask you, Angela, to please highlight the nuclear power issues in Florida.
Progress Energy announced in December of 2006 that they are considering a site in Levy County for two new nuclear reactors. The chosen location is a greenfield site, meaning that this land has never been developed before. The proposed location is 7 miles inland from the Gulf of Mexico and 9.6 miles from the existing Crystal River Energy Plant. The estimated cost of the new nuclear reactor site is $17 billion. According to the Army Corps of Engineers, the proposed nuclear site will wipe out about 765 acres of Levy County wetlands. Half of the wetlands that are scheduled to be destroyed are located on the proposed site itself. The rest lie along the 180 miles of corridors that will be needed by the plant to run new transmission lines. The new nuclear plant would ingest over 1 million gallons of water per day from the Florida aquifer. While at its peak, the plant could use closer to 5 million gallons of water per day. Progress Energy has announced very minimal plans as to how they would compensate for this water usage. The plan proposed by Progress Energy announces no indication for adding new wetlands or for restoring drained wetlands. To prevent floodings of the plant location, post-construction, Progress Energy plans on installing a surrounding wall around the perimeter of the reactor site in order to divert water. The wetlands will be filled with dirt, and the reactors will be built 80 feet above ground. According to the Withlacoochee Regional Planning Council, quote, the placement of fill can alter or redirect flood and storm waters resulting in lateral expansion of the floodplain or increases in flood waters, unquote. Within a 5-mile radius of the proposed Levy County nuclear reactor site, there is a simultaneous application by Tarmac America to build a limestone mining site. The limestone mining site would be built on the same area of wetlands that the Levy County nuclear plant is proposed to be built on, therefore causing even more of a dramatic effect on the Levy County water supply. Progress Energy has yet to announce a plan as to what they will do with the radioactive waste that is produced by the nuclear reactor. There is a good deal of concern about how long the waste will be on site and if it will directly affect the wetlands. There is also concern about the impact of salt drift on the surrounding wetlands. On July 8, 2009, the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board, an extension of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, ruled that the Green Party of Florida, along with the Ecology Party of Florida, and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service are permitted to challenge the proposed plant's federal permit. The petition was originally filed in February of 2009.
Angela, I want to briefly mention that a common tactic of industries is to locate their facilities in areas where there are a lot of poor and people of color. Generally, these communities do not have the political clout to prevent their communities from being used as a site for dangerous and toxic polluting factories or hazardous power plants. Florida Power and Light's proposed Glades Power Park project to build what would have been America's two largest coal-burning power plants, which Yadkidishi Native Center fought against as a co-founder of the grassroots group Save It Now Glades, was to be located in one of Florida's poorest counties, adjacent to a Seminole Indian reservation. Florida Power and Light first tried to build the two coal plants in a more affluent county with a higher demographic of rich white people. Florida Power and Light was not able to fool these more politically aware people from that wealthy county. Principle 4 of the important 17 Principles of Environmental Justice from the historic 1991 First National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit I was a delegate at concerns itself with nuclear issues. Quote, environmental justice calls for universal protection from nuclear testing, extraction, production, and disposal of toxic hazardous waste and poisons, and nuclear testing that threaten the fundamental right to clean air, land, water, and food. Unquote. Progress Energy's proposed nuclear power plant in Levy County is an example of this environmental injustice.
18.6% of Levy County residents live below the poverty line, compared to a Florida state poverty level of 12.5%. As of 2007, the median household income in Levy County was $33,000. That is $13,000 less than the Florida state median income level. Progress Energy began raising electricity rates to these Levy County residents in 2009 to help supplement the cost of the new plant.
Telephone rang, have you heard the news? Carrie and Crow's coming home to roost. Over at the plant, you know something went wrong. Take the children and run. They say they'll fix it if we only stay calm. Go back to your factories, go back to your farms. And don't you get angry, don't you lose your cool. And those bosses will share their power with you. Take the children and run, take the children and run, take the children and run. Thank you. Dr. Atomic lying through his teeth says we've nothing to fear except fear itself, and he visits the plant in a lead-lined suit. He comes out looking like courage on the evening news. Take the children and run, take the children and run, take the children and run. You're on the commission and you're 60 years old. You make a deal with the devil and his prophets unfold. But 20 years down the line and that little girl is in the prime of her life and her blood cells grow wild. Take the children and run, take the children and run, take the children and run. Through an April haze, it looked like a blunderbuss aimed at the skies. It's your friendly atom raging out of control, and your scientists are praying for Lady Luck's smile. Take the children and run, take the children and run, take the children and run. Take the children and run, 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 take the children and run.
Music from the band Atomic Cafe. The name of that song was Take the Children and Run, referring to the March 28, 1979 Three Mile Island nuclear power plant accident when TMI-2 suffered a cooling malfunction which caused part of the atomic core to melt down. Unit 2, a pressurized water reactor built by Babcock and Wilcox, did release radioactive isotopes into the environment. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has never told the public the actual atomic radiation levels they and farm animals and crops were exposed to. While Three Mile Island, which was operated by Metropolitan Edison, is considered the most serious accident in American commercial nuclear power, it is important to point out that there are often many violations of Nuclear Regulatory Commission regulations by various energy utilities, including Florida Power and Light. Angela, that was an excellent summary of Progress Energy's nuclear power plant proposal to be built in Levy County, Florida. Would you please now highlight Florida Power and Light's current Turkey Point nuclear power project proposals?
Turkey Point is home to two risky nuclear reactors and is located on the Biscayne Bay just south of Miami. The site is 22,000 acres large, and the reactor site itself uses up 3,300 acres of the mangrove swamps and Florida wetlands. The two nuclear reactors at Turkey Point were built in 1972 and 1973, respectively. In 2002, the NRC reissued the license for Turkey Point to be operational for 60 years. The two existing reactors at Turkey Point have now operational rights until 2032 and 2033, respectively. The nuclear reactor site at Turkey Point poses a large threat to Florida's wetlands as it stands, and the proposed expansion will create a larger risk. In order for the expansion to be built, 10 million cubic yards of coastal wetlands will be mined and filled so that the reactors can be built on top. In order for the two new nuclear reactors to be built, FPNL must also build 230-kilowatt high-voltage transmission lines, which are unsafe and would be placed running through surrounding neighborhoods. The unsightly and dangerous lines would be close to 18 miles long and line US 1 in Miami, Florida. According to the Energy Information Administration, the area surrounding the Turkey Point reactor site experiences tropical storm strength winds about every 2 years, and stronger hurricane force winds at least once every 7 years. The radioactive waste that is present at the Turkey Point site is not moved from the site during hurricanes. 1992, Hurricane Andrew hit Miami and Turkey Point nuclear reactor site head-on. Gusts exceeding 175 miles per hour were observed at the reactor site before equipment failed. The risk of another major hurricane hitting Turkey Point reactor site is still incredibly valid, and rather than expanding the amount of nuclear facilities on this site, it would be wiser to increase safety measures, as in recent years, Turkey Point has experienced several security breaches. In 2009, Florida Power and Light applied to the NRC for approval to build two new risky nuclear reactors and for placement of new transmission lines at the existing reactor site. The planned expansion would cost FPNL customers an estimated $18 billion. This cost is paid for entirely by FPL customers, not by the federal government or private investors. South Florida residents have already begun to feel the cost impacts associated with the proposed expansion costs. FPNL is currently asking the Florida Public Service Commission to approve a $1 billion rate increase that would become effective in January 2010. The addition of two new nuclear reactors will require an additional 84 million gallons of water per day to be consumed by the power plant. In order for the additional water supply to be accommodated, FPNL will construct a 9-mile pipeline that would carry water from the nuclear reactor site from Miami-Dade's water treatment plant. The cost of this pipeline will also be paid for via increased electric rates by the FPNL customers. Since the two reactors at Turkey Point have been operational, that is, the past 35 years, over 2 million pounds of nuclear waste has accumulated in southern Miami-Dade. The waste at Turkey Point is currently being held in a large cooling pool on its site, but the pool has nearly reached its maximum capacity of radioactive material. In June of 2009, FPNL began to very quietly apply for permission to rezone the Turkey Point property so to build dry cask storage on site that would occupy 6 acres of what is presently mangrove swamps. In order for the dry casks to be built, the wetlands will first need to be filled so that the waste can be placed on top of the area. Due to the lack of an NRC permanent radioactive waste disposal plan, the radioactive waste at Turkey Point will be on site indefinitely.
Thank you, Angela, for explaining the current issues and proposals for the four nuclear power plants in Florida. According to the U.S. Department of Energy's Energy Information Agency, currently in America, there are 104 commercial nuclear reactors operating at 65 nuclear power plants. What is equally scary is that at least 30 new nuclear power plants are being considered to be built. There has been very little serious public discussion or debate about the nuclear industry's plans for more nuclear power plants. What's worse, government and industry are misleading the public by using words like clean, safe, and economical when talking about nuclear energy. Unfortunately, President Obama has used this terminology in speeches supporting nuclear power as part of America's energy policy. Clean, safe, and affordable nuclear energy is a contradictory expression. It is fiction. Nuclear power's fuel cycle is not clean or safe to people or the environment. I urge all of our international listeners to read Dr. Helen Caldicott's book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming or Anything Else, published in 2006 by Melbourne University Press, available in bookstores and in libraries. I've had the honor to personally know and learn from Dr. Caldicott for many years. She has been an anti-nuclear activist for much of her professional career. A Harvard University professor of pediatrics, she co-founded Physicians for Social Responsibility. Dr. Helen Caldicott is truly a woman of peace and justice who is concerned for the well-being of all life on Mother Earth, now and for future generations. This is an ethic of indigenous peoples. Another oxymoron that is now often spoken is that nuclear energy is a renewable energy source. I heard Florida Governor Charlie Crist at the 2007 Florida Summit on Global Climate Change call nuclear power a renewable energy source. Nuclear power is not a renewable resource. Governor Crist and others continue their public relations, or I should say, public deception statements that nuclear power is a renewable energy source. Renewable sources are wind, solar, geothermal, and energy conservation technologies that recycle, reuse energy. Mandy, would you please comment on this?
Well, renewable energy does not rely on finite resources. Uranium is the feedstock for a nuclear reactor, and it is a finite resource that must be mined and is most often mined on what is called First Nations land. And so here we come back to the environmental justice implications, and there's a lot of things going on in Australia now with the Aboriginal lands and the uranium mines that they are just expanding like crazy right now. And not getting too far into that, but it's all military and private contracts. There are no energy companies involved in this extraction, which is a flag for me. When Governor Crist came in and he signed the energy bill in summer of 2008, he released an executive order and signed it into legislation that there would be a 20% renewable portfolio standard in Florida before he left office. Well, the legislation didn't ever come, and even if it had, they had manipulated the language in such a way to say that it would be the clean energy standard rather than the renewable energy standard. And that's just a way for them to slide nuclear in, because nuclear is not a renewable energy source. There's no one that could define it that way. So changing it to the clean energy standard would not only include nuclear, but it would preclude real renewable sources, because they would be able to meet that 20% with the nuclear reactors that they were proposed, which would completely negate the whole purpose, which would be to get renewable sources like solar and wind in Florida.
You're gonna rip my life all over ever. Rrrr. rangambele pamajara jara jara pamajara jara pamajara jara jara pamajara jara pamajara jara jara pamajara jara.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kidichi Native Center. Yat-Kidichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kidichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kidichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kidichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat-Kidichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat-Kidichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat-Kidichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat-Kidichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat-Kidichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat-Kidichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kidichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat-Kidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
The music you heard prior to our Yat-Kidichi Native Center program identification was from the Aborigine band Nunkul Kunjil. The name of that song was Jara, meaning Mother Earth. The band gifted me their CD when they were part of an Aborigine dance troupe touring in America in order to raise funds for the Aboriginal rights movement. The cultural history of genocide by Australia and the contemporary colonial rule over Aboriginal lands and people is very similar to the history and current situation of us American Indians. The uranium fuel cycle exemplifies this situation both in Australia and in what is now called America. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Please listen next week for Program 3 of Climate Change Energy Justice, a conversation with three youth activists. I again want to thank Mandy Hancock, Angela Cisneros, and Amanda Adams for sharing their views with us on Wolf Mountain Radio. Yadkinishi Native Center urges people to get involved in climate and energy justice issues. There are many good campaigns and organizations like Energy Action Coalition's Power Shift. Please visit their website, www.powershift09.org. Listeners who wish to learn more about nuclear energy issues, please visit the website of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, www.nirs.org. I always like to say, it's better to be active today than radioactive tomorrow. We shall conclude today's broadcast with a flute song by Robert Tree Cody and Will Klipman off their Canyon Records CD, Heart of the Wind. The name of the song is First Contact. When Europeans first came ashore on my Wabanaki homeland and other northeast coastal tribal nations, my Nitchitunganooks, my ancestors, gifted the Wampisketonk, the white people, our sacred quahog, clam, bead, wampum belts to express peace, friendship, equality, and codes to protect Mother Earth. Unfortunately, Europeans and later the Americans never respected those ethics. 365 years after the Pilgrims washed ashore, when the decision to build the Seabrook nuclear power plant and later the U.S. government's plan for a nuclear waste dump on Penacook and Wabanaki lands, anti-nuclear activists met with my tribal people to fight against this nuclear madness. Our slogan was, no nukes, no dumps. Thus was found the Clamshell Alliance, named in honor of the quahog, a northern bivalve mollusk, commonly called a hard clam, who inhabits intertidal waters of what's now called the northeast Atlantic coast of America. The quahog, prior to being contaminated by pollution, was an important food source for my Indian people. In my youth, I spent many happy days in the seacoast mudflats gathering the quahog. This clamshell was also the material we Northeast Indians used to make our sacred bee treaty belts. I am honored to have been part of the Clamshell Alliance, and I am honored to still be fighting against nuclear power. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wontakwasin, to all of our relations.